All right, thank you all for coming tonight. First item is a roll call for attendance. Can we have that, please?
Mr. Blair?
Here.
Mr. Simon?
Here.
Mr. Mendoza?
Here.
Mr. Fairbanks?
Here.
Mr. Small?
Here. All directors are present on the floor. Next item is the approval of minutes. This is the regular meeting of November 15th, if you're considering. I had a couple little things I highlighted on item 4 on page 2. I think we got the wrong track number on that one. I think it's supposed to be 1747.
Very good, Steve.
That's all I had. Anyone else have any comments or questions on the minutes? Any public questions regarding what happened last meeting? Okay, if there is any motion, then we approve the minutes with the correction I noted.
I so move.
Motion by Director Simon. Do I have a second?
Chair.
I'm second by Director Mendoza. All directors in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nobody's opposed. Motion passed unanimously. Item number 2 is a public comments period. Anyone in the audience that would like to speak to an item that's not on the agenda tonight can do so at this time. We're going to have Byron Briley, who's he's a CSD appointment to LAFCO. He's going to say a few words, but is there anyone else that would also like to speak? Okay, well, let's have Byron up then. Mr. Briley.
Thank you, Dr. Carlo. I'm your LAFCO rep, and doing my rounds and spread a good word of what's going on in the county these days. A little bit of background. I don't know if you read the paper or heard, but all the city council got to meet together at a joint meeting up in Wall Bay on September 27th. And at this meeting, all the city councils are there. They were we'll see things all the cities, and actually passed some motions that they felt that they had some joint concerns that they needed to air, and one of those main concerns was LAFCO, and they invited Bob Raitman, who's a former executive officer from the Ventura County of LAFCO, currently serves as contract executive officer of Santa Barbara County LAFCO, come up and give his speech on the power of LAFCO, why they should be an instrument from the county, not staffed by the county, and urban planning and whole long talk. Well, last week I got my mail that San Luis Obispo Council Chairman Slocog was getting together and they were going to discuss having LAFCO become independent. Well, it struck my fancy that, well, who the hell are you? And don't tell me what to do, even though I do think it's a good idea. So I went to the SLOCOG meeting to find out exactly why council governments really want to have LAFCO be independent of the county. And most of their problems comes from a perception that the county LAFCO is biased towards county proposals. But the real root is that they're just upset with county, period. And that cannot be today. And the majority of their disgruntlement is property tax change, which, if you do your research, LAFCO really has nothing to do with property tax change. The county government does, the county administrator's office does, who the current LAFCO administrator works for. So there tends to be this presumption that LAFCO is pretty much carrying out the ones of the county. So what SLOCOG did after this morning was they agendized a workshop for all the city councils to sit down with the supervisors. The supervisors were pretty good out of shape. They invited us to Monterey, so we're going to have a workshop. It's tentatively scheduled for January on topic is going to be tax exchange, sales tax and property tax between cities and the county. So I jumped up and said, wait a minute, I'm also vice president of the Special District Association. You aren't really a set of group of people. You're some disenfranchised the special district. So special districts are going to be set in that meeting. You're going to get an invitation. You're all invited to come. It's going to be great. I know the boss sent numerous letters back and forth about property tax and annexation. So that's tentatively for January 20th. Market calendars, plenty of calendars, and bank agreements. The other thing that they're going to talk about is building around your borders, whether the county approved the subdivision right next to your fairground zones or next to your boundary, as they've done the family of Zippo. They feel that's something that they need to discuss. That's going to be on the agenda. The other thing that Floyd Cog did today, they had a nice little presentation on Constitutional Revision Commission, and they felt that it was just an enormous amount of information. So they're going to be sending every elected official in the county, once again, special district members were added by bundles candidates. You're going to be getting a questionnaire on how you feel about the Constitutional Revision Commission, and they invite you to discuss it for me. All levels of government in the state, and that's looming in our future in next November 15th, no current point in the history of California, if some of their propositions go through. Back to LAFCO. Flocog today decided that LAFCO is the only one that's going to be able to decide LAFCO's independence and decentralization. And that is going to be on LAFCO's agenda for next Wednesday, a week from today, 11 p.m., County Board of Supervisors Chambers, bring this to the LAFCO meeting in December. And the topic is going to be whether there should be an independent or a dependent LAFCO. And of the 56 LAFCOs in the state of California, there are apparently 17 that are considered to be independent. County employee working with the administrator by contract or MOU or bring some creative ideas for staffing LAFCOs. And there's some definite pros and cons. It costs a heck of a lot more money to have an independent LAFCO, but the board has ultimate control. Tonight, some LAFCOs out there feel it's a perception of them, but John can tell you and all of you know that in the state feel that when you have a conflict of interest for you personally in the elections code, that the real evidence is perception. So perception is a relevant issue. Supervisors, perception doesn't matter what people think out there. But kind of like your voice be heard out there in the state. You guys are feeling towards the defense that you've done this last go. Feel free to call me if you want to know my opinion or show next week.
Barbara, that's the 20th.
11 p.m. or 11 a.m. I
wouldn't
surprise. 11 o'clock in the morning.
That's the supervisor's chamber.
Isn't that usually on
the
Thursday or
the
Thursday?
Yeah, I thought it was the third Thursday.
It's usually, it's a holiday season. Supervisors couldn't make it on third Thursday, so non-dependent staff.
Thank you for carrying our torch there. And,
and we'll try to support you by getting at least a couple of members there, or maybe a staff or two represented as well. Any other... First of all, did directors have any questions of Byron before he cut him loose? Okay. Of course, he doesn't have to leave. I'm not like Johnny Carson trying to rush you off stage.
I don't want to hear about
this.
Okay. All right, then. If that's all the public comments. Item number three under board administration is the wastewater treatment facility expansion. Mr. Jones?
Yeah, Mr. President, the district has contracted with John Jenks, member of Kenny Jenks Associates, along with Jerry Taylor and Associates, to review our wastewater facility and recommend an expansion plan to go forth with the increasing the capacity of the plant. Mr. John Jenks is in the audience, and he has put together a report which was handed out at the last board meeting to the board members, so they had time to review it. And Mr. Jenks will make a presentation at this time of the report and answer any questions that any of the board members have.
Okay.
Working with your general manager and engineer on this project too. One of the things that I have always found interesting to me in making this kind of a presentation is to set it in context of what it is we're talking about when we say wastewater. I don't know if you've ever gone through this exercise before, but the question that comes up is how many pounds of water does it take to convey a pound of pollutants down to the wastewater treatment disposal facility? That is to say, your potable water comes into your distribution system, you go through single-family residence, commercial institutions, it picks up pollutants, it carries them down in the sewer. And just sort of a guess, would anybody want to hazard a guess as to how many pounds of water it takes to convey a pound of pollutants down the sewer?
6 pounds.
Okay.
Good
guess.
Do I get the prize or what?
If I just delayed so long, I'd be closest.
John, is this solid waste? You're talking when you say pollution?
Any kind of pollution. Let's put it this way. The commonly accepted figure on a per capita basis is every individual contributes 0.2 pounds of pollutants into the sewer system each day. And at the same time, each person contributes, we've just got some figuring, 60 gallons per capita per individual per day. So you have 60 gallons of water conveying 0.5 pounds. So 0.2 into 1 is 5 times, and 5 times 60 in this case, this is 300 gallons, and 300 gallons, and a gallon of water is 8.34 pounds per gallon, so it's about 2,400 pounds of water, or over a ton of water for every pound of pollutant that's carried down the sewer system. And, one of the reasons for pointing this out is to just sort of demonstrate the fact that when we talk about wastewater treatment and disposal, we're dealing with a very small amount of pollutants and a very large amount of water. This gives rise, for instance, to the concept of reclamation. And in comparison to seawater, you can see there's a very small amount of pollutants in comparison to, say, 30,000 milligrams per liter of salt in seawater as compared to maybe 200 milligrams per liter. Anyway, I just passed it on. I assume that you all have read studiously the report that I prepared, and if it pleases you, I'd like to just highlight a few of the what I think are pertinent factors. In the introduction, we point out that the facilities that we have now were designed and constructed in 1984, and for a capacity of 360,000 gallons a day, or 0.36 million gallons a day, under conditions of the State Water Resources Control Board, the regulatory authority. In the chapter on existing conditions, we point out that basically the facilities have three elements to it. One is the headworks, which consists of a pumping plant, preceded by a grinding system that grinds up the heavier solids the smaller particles, and then the pumping plant that pumps it into two aerated lagoons. And in the aerated lagoons, you have basically stabilization and settling out of solids, digestion of solids. And basically what happens in the lagoon is what would normally happen in nature if you just put the wastewater out into the pond and just let it sit. It'll stabilize and ultimately become innocuous. But what you do, and this is the objective of wastewater treatment, is to do in a short period of time in a small area what nature would do ordinarily in a much larger area if it's done without nuisance or a smaller area, and you can't have results. Nuisance primarily in the form of odors. And the system that you have, the aerated lagoons, is one of the most rudimentary and efficient system that you have if you have the area, and you do have the area, it works very well. The effluent from the aerated lagoons then go into the infiltration basins, so there's a sense in which you have in this district 100% reclamation. All of the wastewater goes back into the ground that supplements the existing groundwater supply in the ground. Point out that the waste discharge requirements, which are regulated by the state of California State Water Resources Control Board and the Regional Water Quality Control Board, in your case, you are not subject directly to Environmental Protection Agency federal EPA standards because you do not discharge into the surface water. And so the Regional Water Quality Control Board issues a permit, and that permit that you have is quite antiquated. It goes back to 1983. And the EPA standards are revised every 5 years. You have not had a revision because you're not subject to the EPA requirements. And one of the things we point out is that the requirements really are in need of revision. There are some requirements there that should be changed. The requirements basically are established in order to have an operation that will not be conducted with nuisance intended to it. And also there are requirements having to do with groundwater, because all the treated wastewater does infiltrate into the ground in the infiltration basin. And so the limitations there have to do with PDS and sodium and chlorides and sulfate and boron and nitrate. And one of the first things that we did was ask the question, how are you doing in regard to those constituents in the ground? And we find that, literally, according to the requirements, you are exceeding PDS and also chlorides and sodium and sulfate. But at the same time, there is nothing that would indicate that as far as the groundwater itself, except in the immediate vicinity of the ponds, that there's any impact at all. And so we're prepared to argue the point, if it becomes necessary, that there is no impact. Therefore, they should not have an arbitrary requirement that does not have significance in terms of the groundwater. Anyway, that's a subject in itself, but I think it was important for us as your engineer in this regard to be able to point out to you that there is a degree of uncertainty as to mineral constituents. And this has nothing to do with the treatment plant at all, as you're probably aware. That is, it's inherent to the water itself, plus the incremental increase that results from going through the sewer system to distribution systems. And
so we can expect no improvements in that regard with the expansion of the plant.
You're talking about demineralization,
right,
type of thing, and obviously that's not something that you want to look forward to. And in my judgment, it's not at all necessary. In respect to reliability and efficiency, we went through each one of the elements, and we found that basically, coming into the treatment plant in Edwards, you do have some deficiencies, principally in two directions. One has to do with the grinders. The grinder, if one grinder is inadequate in terms of capacity, there is some backing up, and that happens periodically. In fact, I think each day there is some bypassing around that results from that inadequacy, and that in turn brings up questions having to do with accuracy of the flow metering. And also there's the inlet piping is very expressed surprised as I do too, as you investigated and found that there's an inconsistency there. That you have Katie's pipe going out, the problem's pipe coming in, and neither one of them have adequate capacity for the total flows. But you have now, and certainly from the standpoint of rejection. We also went through the ponding system, and we determined that the ponding system actually is working very well. There's a peculiar requirement that, again, gets back to the waste discharge requirements, but they incorporated something from the original design in there that had no place in it as far as the operation, and they mandated a particular form of operation, which did not result in effective operation. And district staff knows how to operate these facilities to much better advantage, but they were attempting to adhere to an arbitrary requirement, which the regional board really has no legal power to enforce anyway, because they can't dictate the manner and means of meeting requirements. That is the case. It's one of those things that needs to change. But it's operating very well, and then the overflow from the area, the lagoons goes into the infiltration beds, and we think those infiltration beds have a lot more capacity. And again, district staff has been operating it with a schedule that was determined and put into the waste discharge requirements, and we have to place there. And I think they do have a lot of additional capacity. But as far as deficiencies in respect to the rated capacity of the plant, they simply don't exist today, except for those two items in the headworks that we talked about. So we're pleased to be able to report that. We asked ourselves then about the projections into the future. We accepted basically the projections that Boyle has done for you as part of a separate study, but we modified a little bit, and we concluded that the ultimate build-out would probably be represented by Lake Water flows of 0.94 and then 40,000 gallons a day. 2.82, let's say 3 million gallons a day peak flows. And it was on that basis then that we then evaluated what the needs would be in order to accommodate these flows and still continue to meet the requirements. We looked at various alternatives, both having to do with the headworks and then the area of the lagoons and the infiltration beds, and you'll see the results of that, which basically is what I've just explained to you. And that is, it does appear as if there's adequate capacity for now, but at some time in the future, it would be necessary to expand the aerated lagoons or an alternative system. And we looked at and evaluated alternatives of having a formal wastewater treatment facility of either one of two types, this one of the film reactors, and determined that your present method of operation was clearly the most cost-effective. We estimated ultimately to meet the full projected ultimate capacity of 0.94 million gallons a day capacity required about $1 million expenditure on the existing concept of the existing ponds for 1.7 million for active and 2.1 for the other. So you can clearly see that your existing system is very efficient and should be considered into the future. Then we come to a recommended program, and you see a lot of the work that we did in order to determine and conclude the matter that I just outlined to you. We come up with what we call a proposed master plan, and basically what we felt was appropriate, and your manager agrees, is that at the present time, except for the headworks limitations, which we recommend should be taken care of immediately, and we picked a number of $150,000 worth of work, and Mr. Gehring will be explaining to you, I think, at the next meeting, specifically what he's going to recommend in order to meet those particular needs. But beyond that, what we're saying is we made an evaluation of the existing ponding system. We said 0.36 million gallons a day of design capacity, that it really probably has at least 0.4 gallons of capacity. And that's some time into the future, because your present flows are something a little bit less than 0.3 MPD. So basically what we say is, why spend a lot of money now and commit yourself to a facility that you won't need for some time in the future? And then another aspect of that, too, is that as the improvements to the headworks are completed and put into operation, you'll get a much better understanding of what your flows really are. And we have a suspicion, and Jim Gehring does, too, that your flows are not, that are recorded, they're not really what's there, and it may be that you have less flow than you think. But in any case, you have a much better confidence level as to what your flows are, and then your continuing experience with both your oscillation ponds as well as your infiltration beds will pretty much dictate as to when you actually really need to have additional facilities. We broke it down arbitrarily into four different stages. The first stage, the one I just talked about, the headworks improvements, and then a stage two to increase the existing pumping plant capacity, which we think will evidence itself as to its need when you get the headworks finished as part of stage one. And then stage three would be to put a third lagoon in there for which you already have the hole is dug. It's all ready to go, complete it, to line it, and put the aeration system in. And that is, and we believe that with the conclusion of that your capacity will be up to about 6 inches of an MPV, which is double what your present flows are. So you probably have a better estimate. You certainly would have a better estimate for how when that might take place. But we are suggesting that be put off until you see when the needs are indicated to occur. And then the stage four, the last one would be an additional, which would then be a fourth oxidation pond, which should take care of the element needs at that time. Anyway, I think the bottom line and probably the significant word that I have through this report to you is that your existing facilities basically are operating very well. Basically, I believe they have more capacity than they were designed for. I do not see an immediate need for going out and spending significant sums of money other than for those immediate improvements that we've indicated. And I think the proposal to do this on a staged basis is a logical one, it's a fiscally responsible one for you, and you're in a position to be able to do it because of the fact that
back to the headworks just for a second, the conflict of 8-inch versus 12-inch and all that. Is that a design deficiency, or did it not get built as designed?
No, it was built as designed. Jim, you've looked at it more closely than I have, but my guess is that they saw that there was a certain amount of flow and slope to the 8-inch pipe, and they accepted that it would be able to take care of it. And it won't.
Yeah. It has to that point.
It's 15 years old. And,
right.
Who knows what was in the minds of the people who were in
it. I guess our future thought wasn't quite enough projected.
Could be. But it's not a major problem to correct. And Jim already has worked out some alternatives on that and is coming up with a recommendation to hear about the next meeting.
Did do you have any questions or comments, Mr. James, while he's up here? Go to the board.
We discussed all this pretty much in detail. Okay. Bring the board up on the history assignment set.
Yeah, I do have one question. Was Black Lake at all included in any of this?
No. But I am talking to Doug about that Black Lake on behalf of the developer and his engineer. So anyway, we're talking about that.
Okay, I assumed that you were, but I just wanted to
do that. Yeah, it just happened.
Oh, good. Yeah.
It was my understanding that
he was
supposed to be including this
report. No, this is strictly on the
Napomo
project.
Right. The developer asking that question way back when, and I thought the answer was yes, Black Lake was going to be looked at.
Well, Black Lake has been looked at by the developer. Mr. Jenks came in first to do a brief analysis, and then the engineer, Walson Associates, thought they would proceed on the matter, but they felt that they needed additional expertise, so they're bringing Mr. Jenks back in and putting that plan together, and with his recommendations, we'll be designing the expansion to the Black Lake facility, which is the developer's responsibility to extend it.
There's a lot of talk in Black Lake about a tertiary, and I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that correctly, but about a tertiary system, which means an additive to the present reclaiming of the water. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, tertiary in the sense that I understand that they're talking. Tertiary would be anything other than secondary treatment, Black's definition in terms of say what the objectives are. As I understand it, what they want to use now, understood with the juice. Reclaim water for irrigation of lawns around homes, as well as golf course, which is prohibited now because you have to have separation. But in order to do that, you have to have a significant amount of distance between the ground with Black Lake does provide now, and it's not inexpensive.
Well, that's, of course, what is bothering everybody. It's the cost. But the cost factor has been estimated at as high as $40,000 per residence. A little under that, maybe 38.
Anyway, it would require a significant commitment of facility in order to reduce the amount of residuals in the pond effluent. You have to go through filtration, coagulation, sedimentation, as well as a much higher level of disinfection. Again, on behalf of the developer, on the extension to Black Lake. And that's a very well operated and maintained facility. I'm very much impressed with it. They're doing just an excellent job. But basically, it incorporates conceptually the same thing we have at the home, right? That's everything they're doing. It again serves to demonstrate the validity of using this kind of system. Simple to operate, very reliable, cost effective. So that's what's being proposed, is to expand that in the same way we've been talking about here. But beyond the normal treatment, to meet they do have, of course, a different requirement than you have here, because they are using the water on the golf course. And so they have to have adequate disinfection, and that's a whole separate step that you don't have.
So the deep stage is the same thing.
You were talking about the best way to handle that. But it's totally separate from what we're talking about here.
If you guys have questions, Mr. Jenks, regarding costs or anything?
Yeah. What did it cost to build the whole circle?
Yeah. I don't remember what, 800,000?
No.
Oh, the whole sewer system was done close to 10
years. No, but I mean just the sewer plant itself.
Oh.
100,000? 200,000? It just seems like 150,000 in four stages. That means we got, what, three more stages coming down the road?
Each stage
is
identified.
I think you said 400,000
for stage 3 and
600,000
for stage 4,
something
like that.
Right.
Well, there's, what, 10,000 people in the coma? If you divide that into 150,000, that's a considerable piece of change right there. I mean, just
that part.
Well, that's one of the reasons we suggested putting it off.
It's not something that needs to be immediately rushed into.
No.
Stage 1 can increase the capacity from our 0.3 to 0.4.
Exactly.
That's a 30+% increase for $150,000.
Yeah.
Well, what I'm getting at is will building fees cover part of this? See, that's...
100%.
Because you get what I like to think is, if you stay the status quo, people are here, got to pay for this. If there is some growth, then growth and development fees will pay for part of it. And
right.
Well,
if there's no growth, there's no reason to do it.
Right. I mean, if there's no growth, true, that's what I'm saying. If there's no growth, there's no reason to do it. So fees high enough that it's going to compensate the district for...
Right, the sewer capacity has been designed so as building comes in, they pay the capacity fee, which goes into a fund for future expansion.
Okay. And incidentally, that's exactly what South Central Special Tax Citation District is doing.
So, in other words, the brake payers aren't really going to bear the brunt of this.
That's
correct. Growth and development is. That's, I mean, that's... what the ratepayers want to hear. I think we ought to get that out so they understand that, so they don't think that they got $150,000 they're going to have to.
Well, this information is going to be translated into Perry Locke's work.
Correct.
As well, so I can look at...
when we have the sewer and water rate study, he would look at these proposed improvements, look at our past growth rate, projected growth rate, and come up with the dollar amount necessary to put the improvements in.
Yes, gentlemen in the back there. Say your name, please, for the record.
I'm Frank Burke. I'm the resident of Nicole.
Okay.
The question is, what's the total population of Nicole? Not everybody's on a school system. A lot of septic systems. That's what they're taking consideration too, I guess.
That's true.
I have another question. The gentleman was talking about civil engineering, sanitation, and what they were talking about, basically. Okay, so how come it's... Gehring and Taylor involved in sanitation? How about they were survey engineers?
We lost him.
Pardon?
You just said Gehring.
My name is Gehring.
We brought in surveyors, planners, design engineers, and it's all the water systems, water systems,
water systems, plants. Okay, so I was just wondering, because, you know, I keep saying that the yellow tape is survey engineers, and then I just
missed a small print.
That should be taken into consideration, I think, heavily, because, like you said, you put it on a back burner, not being critical, but you've got a lot of people on septic systems, so only the new houses being built are probably going to be involved in this case, right?
Yeah, it depends on their lot sizes, and what, you know, if they're an acre or more, they probably won't want to be on a system.
And of course, the location, too, I think.
Do you have about 1,500 sewer customers present? About 1,500 sewer customers now, and over 2,000 water customers.
And this gentleman is talking about 10,000, and we're talking about 10,000.
We're talking about total population. Well, his numbers have been evaluated from the standpoint we have a certain flow now with X number of people hooked into it. He's assuming, you know, an X number of percent population growth. I think a maximum of probably 30,000 people in the next 25 years.
And
we may need to triple. If we triple our population, we'll probably need to triple our sewer capacity. If all the houses get built over the next 20 years on 1 acre or more, we won't need to grow our plant at all.
Isn't there supposed to be a set growth limit on that too, or percentage-wise?
County-wide there is.
It depends on the
growth. San Francisco County's 2.3%, I believe. That proposition passed 6 years ago or 7 years ago, but that doesn't mean that the pommel can't grow at a higher rate than 2.3, and it has for the last 2 years. It's been around 5-6%. But the county overall is around 2.5.
My comment on that is, to your question is, it depends where you want the growth. Do you want a lot of people packed in high density in downtown Napoleon, or do you want them out towards the Mesa on bigger lots? So that's...
Okay, Mr. James, any other board questions? Mr. James, before you have a seat, any more public questions or comments? Okay, thank you, Mr. James, for your presentation. Appreciate it. Thank you for your work.
Jim, did you have anything you wanted to add before you before we left the topic?
Well, thank you, Mr. President. I do not tonight, but I will be with you the first meeting in January to discuss in some detail what the options are as far as what we're going to do.
Okay, thank you.
John or Doug, did you want to say other closing words?
No. I think it's an excellent report. Took a lot of input from staff and the process of coming up and staging. I think it's a good program in the aspect of fiscal management of our funds and expansion of funds.
Yeah.
Especially getting the headworks up and running first so we actually get a real accurate synopsis of what's going on in our fields.
Well, the 0.4 million gallon per day estimate, will that cover all the well service we have now and maybe those that we expect in the next year or two, a couple of years?
I have to go back and look on that.
Okay. I didn't know if, you know, it's about a 30% increase on capacity. You think that would cover, you know, buildings we're looking at?
No, curious about how it
is. How much 12-inch stuff are you putting in? I don't know if you said, what, 12-inch?
Well, right now there's a 12-inch coming into the metering, the flow, and only an 8-inch going out. And we're getting some backing up, and then beyond that it is the grinder, and the grinder sometimes backs up because the feed flows and it basically backs up to the distribution system like a reservoir. And when you do that, you get flooding of the flume, and then you don't get an accurate reading of the flow. That's basically what Mr. Jensen is talking about.
So in other words, there's
12-inch
coming in, but it gets found up in the middle
of
the stuff.
Right, and the max plan, I think, boil and churning based on their model indicates that eventually a capacity of equipment to 21 inches may be brought in. So, and we may need the 12 inches in place and bring in another 15 or so alongside it to get to that equivalent 21 inch capacity. And like Jim Gehring will be going over some of these things at the first meeting in January, capacity sizes and parallel lines.
All right, so we have no action facing us on that item. Just a report, culmination of some work. Let's move on to the next item. Item number 4 is the Sonic Cable TV payment drop box. Mr. Jones?
Yeah, Mr. President, we received a request from Sonic Cable TV to put a payment drop box on the, in the office of the district. Some of the concerns that the staff has, you know, additional time. Involved when people come in and pay questions or pay water bills, may ask questions about the box and asking for a change and maybe there probably be a phone number on the box. They may wish to use the phone and additional space being taken up by the counter and some other unknown consequences about having a drop box in the office. The district president has a drop box at the front door. Maybe suggested that someone could contact the property owner and put up a similar box instead of having it in the office. I'm not sure if there's a representative from Sonic in the audience. They thought they might have one, but I guess they couldn't make it. So those are some of our concerns. The advantage of having a payment box here is that the people that come in and pay their water bills could pay the Sonic TV bill at the same time. I understand there is a pay station in the where is it, Cookster?
In Rexall, why not?
Rexall.
We like it, all the other utilities, and instead of using our MCSB offices and manpower for that, you know,
right.
Rexall, who invites the traffic, literally.
Right. But though, I think with if they went to Rexall or something else, they'd have probably have to pay a certain percentage of the revenue collected where they figure a pub can't engage with them being close.
Okay, if you guys are going to talk, you're going to have to give your name. You can't just jab at me. And just leave, but. Okay. I have some feelings on it. Are there questions or comments?
I just express one concern that no matter which way you go, you're going to be establishing a precedent. And
that was one of mine. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. I was going to say something about that. Yeah, I didn't want to start on something that maybe we'll regret later, because I can see a whole row of drop boxes pretty soon. It's going to be PG&E and SoCal Gas, and then when Sony DSS gets in here, even bigger than they are now, they're going to want a Sony payment box and an RCA payment box. And right now, cable's kind of just one company for an opponent like Sony, but that's not going to be the case in a year or two. It's all under review right now, but in the rest of free markets, and then we're on the hook for competitors. I understand we can structure the agreement to terminate in 60 days, but I don't know if we even want to bother to put a stamp on the envelope and mail it, correct or not.
Yeah, I don't know of any public entities that are involved in some type of franchise.
There's no way it's not going to create some problem. It's not possible that long.
I want to ask Lisa a question. How many people, say we got 100 people pay their bill, so how many people walk in and pay it opposed to people mail it in?
Probably about 20% pay walk in.
So most of the people mail their bill in.
Well, usually when you get a bill, they send you an envelope, and of course you expect you to put it back.
Well, not always, but what I'm getting at is most of the people don't come down here to pay their bill anyhow. And like somebody said, I've worked in pharmacies because I'm a pharmacist. Pharmacies like the foot traffic. They take the post office and all this stuff because they want people to come in there and buy toothpaste. We're not selling toothpaste. The only thing we're doing is increasing our liability in the parking lot, in the building, and a whole bunch of stuff. And I don't really think we need to open ourselves up for that. Let them put the drop box down there at the pharmacy.
On a personal note, I deliver my own water bill payments, so it's all right there. Since I also worked with another guy at SRS Technologies that lives in Tumwa, I delivered his water bill payment. And one other person, I delivered them, because they all know I live close, They go, hey, you're going by the district office and hand it to me at work. Now I'm going to have to bring their darn cable bill. Next, they'll be mailing in their crock pot warranty. So, I don't know. I'm just trying to make light of it. Al, did you have any feelings?
No, I agree with Claire. I think there's a lot of liability that wouldn't be recognized in front, but might happen in the back of the program. So I don't think it's a good idea.
Well, in light of that, I'll make a motion that we don't put a Sonic cable drop box on the property.
Let me just hold the motion just a second and go to the public one more time. Are there any public comments or questions?
Mr. Blair, right. Profit. Yeah. Not even worth talking about. It's not a government. It's a business that collects the money. That's their problem, how they get the money. They shouldn't get the county or the government involved. They have to ask the bill collectors, basically, what they're trying to do. And there's going to be liability, like Mr. Simon said, right? Someone gets hurt, they're going to sue the county or the collector, right? That's it, period.
Any others?
I second the motion.
Okay, so we got a motion. Got a motion by Director Blair and a second by Director Simon that we no longer consider the Sonic cable box for placement in on or near our premises. All those directors in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion is passed unanimously. Okay, track 1747, intent to serve letter. Mr. Jones.
And Mr. President, the applicants from track 1747, the Fairview track, which was increased. Brought to the board last meeting in the general information was a 52-acre plot that was annexed to the district, and they are now requesting that a will serve letter be intent to serve letter be issued to their development at the intersection of Thompson Road and Chestnut Street. There's proposed about 189 lots in working out the water demand and sewer demands. It looks like around 50 gallons per minute capacity would be needed to serve this lot. Been peak demand twice that, maybe 100. And sewer flows are relatively minor, 0.03 or 0.04 million gallons per day. Like I said, the plant capacity is 0.4, so there's capacity at the time. As I understand, they'll probably phase this development in, not put in all at one time, but build certain sections of it at one time. In the intent to serve letter, there's some of the restrictions are on there that prior to the issuance of this letter, the well site and easement to that well site would be granted to the district. When the area was annexed to the district, there's an existing well site that anticipated producing approximately 200 gallons per minute, which would be more than adequate to provide water to this service. That the site be easement be given to the district along with the access to that well site. Along with this, the standard request for intent to serve letter, plan check inspection agreement, plans be presented to the district for approval. That the appropriate water and sewer fees be paid, and that all the off-site improvements, water lines and sewer lines, be dedicated to the district. And since I understand it's going to be developed in stages, that a planning schedule be committed to the district for approval. If any common area landscaping, that it be developed for minimum water use, and that phone lines be constructed when the houses are built from the meter box to the phone jack in the house for future automatic metering. Additional background on this one here is when this area was annexed to the district, the county offered a 7.8% of the property taxes to the district, but at this time the state was having a transfer of taxes and the district, especially this district, hit harder than counties or cities. Counties received about a 30% reduction in taxes, cities about 10%, special districts about 40%. And the previous staff thought it was best that the district negotiate a zero tax exchange, therefore keeping approximately 10% of the taxes in the county, not going to the state, with the concept of renegotiating that with the county, going back to the regular tax rate of around 7.7%. But approaching the county has no regulation of that conversation going on, so therefore the zero tax would be involved in this thing, which has been adopted by the county and the district, will be present.
Isn't the zero tax exchange supposed to, that was something that came up a long time that with the Black Lake annexation and Summit Station. It was negotiated for a couple of projects that were in the works. It wasn't a standing policy for everything that came down the pipe.
If there were five annexations that had that zero tax.
Yeah, but I mean, does that mean every future one has to?
No, but the county's not taking a position that anything that's annexed, if it's an enterprise district, there will be no tax exchange. That's what our...
Yeah, I know that's their position.
In fact, the last proposed annexation, which was the Noodle annexation, the county said zero taxes, and we said, no, we would like to negotiate, and the time ran out, so that annexation basically failed because there was no agreement on the tax exchange.
Okay. Back in the foundation period here, that NCSD has formally annexed him.
Yes, and the fees paid for the annexation.
Okay, because this happened a while ago. I don't specifically recollect the annexation, but that's occurred in LAFCO as annexed him. So
LAFCO had approved the annexation.
Boxes are all checked.
And then the district has... The process is LAFCO approves the annexation, then the district has to hold a public hearing for a protest. And there was no protest, and so it was annexed to the district.
And all the directors have to agree, at least the majority of them.
On the annexation?
Right.
So there's some clarification I'm trying to get from the LAFCO, or whether if LAFCO approves an annexation and there is not a minority protest, then the district has to annex the property. At least that's the way it is with cities, with special districts. That's we haven't researched that to that great extent.
Jump in there, Mr. Seitz, for thinking.
I think the board has its inherent authority to either accept or reject And typically what happens in a LAFCO annexation is the Board of Supervisors, for one thing, the Board has to agree on the property tax exchange. But right then and there, there's a bottleneck through the Board. Secondly, the LAFCO Commission comes to the usually to the district or the city prior to during the annexation process to take a straw vote, because they don't want to invest, or neither does the developer want to invest the time and effort into an annexation prior to it getting to the point where votes are taken. And third, I think that the Board has the inherent authority when it comes back to the district to either deny or reject the annexation. We're the ones that are in charge of, for example, to reject or accept, because the Board has the inherent authority to manage its resources. It's not to do it otherwise would assume that the county or a developer would, from outside the district, be able to manage or influence the resources of the district.
Okay, so has this Board taken a vote on this project? Annexation.
That has been updated. It had voted, they passed a resolution accepting the annexation.
So it's in a district.
So called water underneath the bridge.
So it's in the district.
That's correct. Okay.
But the zero tax issue was present at that time.
It was something else was present. Several points, somewhat simplest.
Yeah, so can they attach that on to this now at this point in time?
Yep.
That's what I say, the intent was there, and the county does not remember that intent.
They remember the 7.7% offering, don't they?
I have a piece of paper for that offer.
And their response was?
They don't remember, it's 0%, that's how they think.
Well, it's just funny that certain things are considered with all these conditions, you know, on the table back in 1992 and 1993, and then when it comes around to actually issuing will serves if the conditions change.
Well, it'd be nice if there was a better paper cut.
It's almost, grounds for revoking approval. Because it's changing the ground rules after you take action on something. All these types of things, property taxes change, are all considered when, you know, the Board considers annexation.
The applicants are in the audience if they wish to.
Right.
I think that there was a resolution by our Board of Directors that was passed approving the property tax negotiation.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
The Board expects it.
Approving zero?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
We have a resolution.
Oh, okay. Well, then, that's inconsistent with what the memo says. The memo says the county offered 7.83.
That's correct, and then it was negotiated to zero, and
oh, okay.
I think you voted no.
Yeah, I know I voted no, but okay. Let's any other board questions right now before I turn it over to anybody? Representatives of the project, do you want to speak to anything we're discussing, or add or subtract anything? You're welcome. You can speak either way. If you speak up here, though, we'll get it on tape. It's probably better if you don't mind. If you're dressed, you might as well come up.
Yeah, long haven't been home yet. Carrie came with EJ, okay. And I was just handed the staff report. They came in this evening, so we didn't really have an opportunity to review what was going to transpire on each, as far as conditions.
Okay.
And I just wanted some clarification. Are you talking about the items being addressed before the tentative will serve is initiated, or is it at time of acceptance into the district?
Normally, the only one that's before the will serve intent to serve letter is the well site easement.
And we've already been working on that.
Right. Now, once that's complete, then we'll issue an intent to serve letter, which will have the rest of the conditions.
Yeah, we've taken care of that matter. I've got a copy of the exhibit map and the legal description of the building and PSG for preparation of the easement agreement. And whenever it gets used to prepare the documents, we'll be
One of the conditions is not that the well site, the well be developed. Is the well currently developed? What's the status of it?
It's an old well. It has a pump on it, and we're trying to do a pump test, 72-hour pump test on it. And so it does pump water. And all we're requiring is that we would probably look at that, and then once the pump test is done, either revamp the well or use the existing pump if it's capable. If not, we'd have to put a new pump in it.
I don't have the well pump report on that, but it was my understanding that there was a pump test done on 1992 before the negotiations for the annexation that was part of the agreement. So at some point, there was some testing on.
It wasn't just an e-log, it was an actual.
Yeah. There were some flow calculations based on the capacity.
And that's greatly 200 calories per minute.
Okay, so we're going to do a 72-hour pump test.
Right, I want to do a 72-hour pump test. Yeah. That was done a number of years ago, and depending on the weather conditions and the well groundwater base or groundwater area, this area, we want to just verify it.
What are the different considerably?
Then we have to come back and reevaluate. I mean, but I think when it's gone forth, I don't know if the district can say, well, you know, we're going to reject it because of the weather.
Well, the other thing is, for our British Columbia project, you've got to say you're going to come in with 189 lots in next year. So, you know, the water table and the pumping capacity over the next 5 to 7 years, you're going to say through the project and change substantially from year to year, depending on what the particular circumstances are.
That would be the only well we own on that part of town, right?
Yeah, we have the church well on Savage Well. Our boat's on the side of the freeway. But the church well is the only active well presently on this side of the freeway, on the east side of the freeway.
Okay. Do we propose that? Sorry, Bob, go ahead.
Are we going to need a lift station for this thing?
No.
Okay.
That will flow into the existing lift station.
So one of the conditions here is that the developer include construction of the water supply line from the site to the development system. So the intention for that well itself to serve this project?
No, basically this well, in the diagram, you see the layout, and then at the top of the page, you see the well site. There'll be a water line from that well site over to that road, presumably tied into the water system, and therefore that well will be part of the overall district water system. This is similar to a church well or some other well in the district. It'll be in the system.
Pumping capacity of that well is adequate to provide the service for the 189 units. So over the phasing program, whether we went in with, say, 50 units the first year or 2 years, you're still going to have the availability of that, the water into your system over that long-range period of time until total capacity is developed, which is going to be dictated by the scale.
Why did the number 113 stick in my mind? I thought that's what Dan said the number was for dam loading set for develop this project last time around. I read that somewhere, maybe it's just in the minutes. I don't know. Let's see.
I don't know the minutes.
113 lot subdivision on 42
acres.
Yeah, look at the. I don't have the agenda back here.
Saying 189 lots. There's not going to mix a.
Yeah,
whole heck of a lot of difference, but 189 is the correct number.
Okay. No, I
see. Okay, now this is the one that Mr. Lloyd outlined. Some of the lots are going to be down 2,500 square feet or something like that. Have you got any county feedback on the proposed lot sizes and layouts of the project? As far as their
with the county developing
the first. Okay. Any comments from the audience?
Yeah, I got.
Yes.
About the water here. In the last session we were here, we're at the 11th hour as far as the pipeline going through. Now, if we keep building the formal, we're all going to draw from wells. We're spending all this money as far as testing how many gallons per minute and everything else. So we have state water right here, and we put that right into the deficit. Right.
We have a referendum that says we can't do that.
Well, matter of fact, I talked to Senator Donnelly. They have that.
This is getting me. Money's muddled up.
You know, I'll shut up right now, but we'll bring it back up a little later if you don't mind.
Yeah, okay. Okay. That's fine.
My favorite topic.
Any board comments?
Yeah.
Questions?
Yeah. I like this. I'll tell you a couple of reasons why I like it. One, it's going to be moderate price homes for people. If they're going to pay all the fees, they're going to pay taxes. And it's on this, on the side of the freeway that it's on. It's not going to, I don't think it's going to add to the traffic problems and stuff like it was on the other side of the freeway in between 10th and Division. You know, I,
people can travel out Thompson.
People can go out Thompson, right. They can go out Thompson, or they can go to Santa Maria. They can go down Thompson Road to Santa Maria. And I think it'll really be an asset for Nepal because it offers moderate priced housing. And I think we ought to get it going so that people buy some of this stuff and get advantage of the interest rates before they go up. I mean, this project has been held up like every other project in the county for God knows how long, mainly because of things like agricultural buffers and a bunch of stuff. It really doesn't make too much sense to homeowners. What they want to do is get the house at the best possible price. If we dance these people around another year, the interest rates are going to go back up, and it's going to cost everybody who buys one of these houses another $120 a month. And, and plus, we were just talking before about this $150,000 for the sewer plant. 187 lots, what, $3,000 for a sewer hookup?
$3,500.
Well, then that figures out a little better than $600,000. That's all of my sewer money I'm jumping up and down about. So I kind of like that, too. So I kind of like to give them a will serve liver, but I don't know how the rest of the board is.
Intensive.
Huh?
Intensive.
Yeah, intensive, sir. Yeah, there you go.
What is the price range going to be, or do you have that yet?
I don't know.
Do you have a ballpark?
So we did the smaller subdivision at Hidden Pines.
Would these be in that category?
I have no idea what price range. I don't think we've even gotten into the price of units.
Well, affordable housing is a marvelous thing to have for a community, but it's only affordable to those that can spend the money to pay for it. And if it's $150,000 or $160,000, I don't think it's affordable housing.
I have no idea what.
Are there any builders in here that might like to say something about?
Especially the contractor.
Okay.
Well, didn't the guy last week tell us around 115,000 or 115,000?
Yeah, he said that might be a starting point.
Yeah, I'm going by that. That's what he said, and as I thought it'd be.
Don't hold Dan's.
No, well, that's what he told us, and that's
he doesn't know what they're going to cost.
First, you were this lady was talking about a well. Is that the hold up on his project? Water?
No.
Yeah, I agree with those, you know, those factors. I'm just sort of unidirectional. I'm kind of just looking at water supply problems as well. I'm really concerned about
it. It sounds to me, and I'm not a mathematician, from what Sherry was reporting right there, it sounds to me that there's actually going to be a surplus of water during that time to kill that property and maximize it.
Well, that's, yeah.
if we're going to get into a real old story, I'll jump on my soapbox for just 30 seconds, but the difference I'm trying, the distinction I'm trying to make is between pump capacity and water capacity. And, you know, we can increase our wells ourselves if we want to just increase pump capacity and serve everybody, but we're still overdrafted. So, you know, that's the crux of my problem. It doesn't matter how fast you suck it out, you still suck it out. It has in my eyes. And the preponderance of the data supports it. But we're not going to get into that tonight. Because you guys are a bunch of naysayers.
State water would be beneficial to all these truck houses.
Here we go with the state water again.
Get them filled, but you've got to have state water.
The only thing the district is concerned about wells on the east side of the freeway is the reliability of it. It's kind of in a fractured zone, and you can pump them and get great water supply, and then one day you don't have any water.
That's right. That's what happened up there one day. All of a sudden the water was gone for the next rain.
And the ag users north of that.
The southerly end of Thompson here, isn't that more up towards up on Lost Barrels there?
Yeah, it's north of the valley here, they've experienced that.
Right.
It's just dry as a bone. They've been hauling water down some of the houses, bars and others.
Yeah. Down here?
Lower on North Thompson.
Really?
Yeah.
There's no way to go backwards and doing any votes to try and get a turnout on the state water project. No way at all.
Didn't you gentlemen said last time we were going to have some kind of a specialty vote or something to have it?
We can put that up in the public session.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in the public set part of the meeting because that's really not what we're talking about
right
here.
Okay. Let's
do that a little bit later. But anyway, back on this project. Any other board questions or comments? Mr. Seitz, do you have anything you want to add?
No comments. This will be a standard will serve letter that has the 1-year commitment and will be renewed.
Okay.
And
then
sure.
Is that the well that's been serving that as farming well?
I think that is next.
So it's safe to assume
it's been pumping for... No. It's been inactive for at least a couple of years.
But up until that point, they were growing up there, weren't they? If I remember right.
Well,
they were growing up.
Garbanzos and hay don't take a lot of water. It's been dry, you know, it's been dry farm for a while.
But yeah, the history, I'm not sure the history, but, you know, depending on the reliability of the source, it's pumped up to maybe 350 gallons a minute, down to maybe less than 100, depending on the years. And the weather, it's, you know, climate. And who else is pumping upstream?
Yeah.
Depends
what the vineyards
do. Okay.
I'm going to make a motion with him intent to serve letter, see how that flies.
With the farm station.
With the conditions that's outlined by staff, especially the conditions about the well site.
Yeah.
I didn't think we got a clarification on which one of these items on the staff report would be required.
Number one would be required prior to issuing of the intent to serve letter.
Okay.
The rest of them are basically boilerplate that we issue on almost every will intent to serve letter.
Okay.
So, second the motion.
Okay. Got a motion by Director Blair and a second by Director Fairbanks to issue a intent to serve for Track 1747, subject to compliance with 8 conditions outlined in the memo. All board members in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay, nobody's opposed, but I'm going to abstain from voting on it since I voted no on the original. Not going to the state. I've abstained from voting. Okay, so that's passed, and thank you for your presentation.
Thank you very much.
Same. And, okay, item number 6 is Insta-Tree. This is a removal of trees. Mr. Jones.
Yeah, Mr. President, the contractor Insta-Tree Corporation, who planted all the trees in front of the wastewater treatment plant along Highway 101, indicated that we received a letter from them, and they indicated that they had some frustrations and it hasn't really promoted their business, and therefore they would wish to come along and remove all the trees. They plan to do this maybe in January or February. Staff had looked at, and maybe we could maintain the trees. I need to get more information. If we did maintain the trees, we'd probably revert to wastewater instead of potable water for irrigation purposes. That's one thing we have to look into, though.
The tree service, any benefit there?
The tree,
I mean, it's a visual walk. It's kind of nice, but yeah. Not a whole lot of leaves on them most of the time.
No, well, that's, you know, it's up to the board if you want to just have them just all removed. I have no qualms either way.
The trees, did you look at the original agreement that we had with them? I seem to remember it being, they're giving us the trees.
Yeah, they gave us the trees, and they were supposed to maintain
them. So if we maintain them, we can keep them.
That's correct.
But they're, what they're saying is they're no longer going to maintain them.
That's correct.
And they don't want their sign up.
That's right.
Not that great.
And they have to remove.
Were they, selling the trees? Was that their intent?
Yeah.
And they apparently didn't sell them.
Well, no, they wouldn't be selling those. It's just a thing that they put them up and people would call them and say, yeah, we do that work.
Oh,
we'd come over and plant a bunch of trees.
Aren't the kind of that tree very invasive?
That tree?
Uh-huh.
It's a poplar tree.
Poplar tree.
Right, and the ones on the south end are, I think, are cottonwoods.
Uh-huh. But poplar trees are very invasive in terms of pipes particularly.
Okay.
We wouldn't put anything out there.
Yeah, apparently I'll suck the water down.
In your opinion, were they well cared for, or is that one of the reasons they're not doing well?
I think there were some problems with the irrigation system. It broke down, and they called, they wanted you to fix it, and say, well, look for your agreement. It's your responsibility, not us. And staff spent some time out there trying to keep them going, but they used a lot of water. And like I say, if we switched over, we used to go to wastewater instead of go to the water. And there's some problems with that. You know.
Do you want them? I mean, where Lee's... Let's look at it from the standpoint of who's going to have to be doing the work. I mean, is it pretty labor-intensive to maintain those things properly?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe the poplars should come out. Maybe the cottonwoods, once they're established, would probably be a better tree than the poplars.
I would agree with that.
And then maybe putting some type of evergreen grow along there.
I've seen elk yard. I'll go with what Al said.
Yeah, I've got a lot of small species for sale now. They have puppies.
His nickname is Botany Boy.
Yeah, the poplar trees, I guess, have some type of fungus that comes on the roots, which affects ledge crops. And we have some correspondence of the Ag Commissioner would like the poplars removed, and it would be to watch him see if this fungus gets on the field. Maybe by removing the poplars, we won't have that problem with the eggs. Okay. And leaving the cottonwood.
Well, those guys are going
to
remove.
Well,
yeah, they'll remove.
Yeah, it doesn't cost us anything. They're going to do them.
Or, you know, take them all out. Mm-hmm. And for an expansion, we could put some different type of species in there, maybe an evergreen.
But those ones they have down there, those horse ones along the freeway down towards Solon.
There's
some evergreens that grow up.
They're cypress.
See, that way we can hide the building and everything from the freeway. You know.
There's a, I think some pitch blight or something starting to attack the Monterey pines. And someone said probably in 10 or 20 years all the pines need to be gone, which they can find some means of protecting them.
See, the mistake, again, and maybe this is what the fact that in these trees that they have on the site is that you get the wrong tree in the wrong place, and you've got nothing but problems. Monterey pines are a coastal tree, and if you try to grow them out here, you can have some success with them, but you have problems. But there is always a tree that will work.
How about you?
You think this will work. What are your feelings on those cottonwoods?
We just need stands. They're
a good tree. Well, I just think they weren't probably cared for. Initially, you have to get them established, and it hasn't happened. And they're dirty. That's why you have problems. Can you approach them with the idea of removing the poplars and maybe leaving the cottonwoods and let us take a stab at maintaining them? If it doesn't work out in a few months,
you know, the wastewater irrigation doesn't pan out.
Yeah, the cotton was spread out there like you think out in the
pumpers. Yeah.
Can't you determine whether you can use the wastewater before or quickly?
So they're on a drip system, and usually you start using wastewater that has fines in it. I don't know if they plug up the drips on them. I haven't seen the drips or how big the emitters are.
Maybe will they come with it?
Yeah, they probably just abandon the system.
The drip one was paid for by the district.
You want to stay?
How much would it cost to put regular water out there? Not that much, would it?
I can't remember what Dean said about.
Well, regular water is out there right now, but they're using about 500,000 gallons a month of water.
How many?
500,000.
And that's
the fruit trees are making it on
coming right back down.
10 or 15 gallons three times a week.
I think because these are, Lee was saying these are swamp-like
trees
that they need to constantly.
Yeah, you get the wrong tree.
And it's in the sand, so you're not going to maintain the swamp-like condition.
So it's mainly costing us energy, though, because it's a drip. We don't lose a lot to evaporation, but it percolates a lot.
Yeah.
It's just right
now, when those trees went in, I heard all this good stuff about how great they were.
Well, poplars were quite, about 10 years ago, poplars was the tree of choice for most people that wanted a fast tree, and a lot of ag people were using it for windbreaks, and it was a model for all the kiwi growers, at least in the valley, to use them for the windbreaks instead of the netting. Mm-hmm. And they've all taken them all out.
If we rip those out, will we have to plant an oak in the park? Okay, well, it's sounding more like we ought to have them removed.
Yeah.
It's probably high cost if anything else.
If we did that, then you wouldn't see the mallards.
I've never seen mallards fly out
there. Oh, they're beautiful.
There's a lot of ducks in there.
There's 100 mallards when we drove up.
Yeah, there is. There's a lot of ducks in there.
But you don't see them because they're on the other side of the river. Yeah.
Better duck out in there. There is over Mendoza.
We can sell license. I mean, for the trees license.
Okay. Do we have a cohesive motion, or maybe just a motion by one, and then we'll vote on it?
They're making the other one, so I'll make this.
Tree, put another one in there.
Excuse me? Yeah.
Don't destroy the tree in case you strip the poplars out and put them out.
I'm going to change that. As part of the planned expansion program, there may be a landscape component that would probably be addressed at the time of the expansion. That's typically what most permitting authorities require, so it would probably be part of that.
Excellent. Put off response.
It's true.
Bingo.
Okay. Now before you try.
Excuse me?
But if you pull them down, then they won't make you do a replacement.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not pulling them. They're just saying...
No, let's just get them out of there. Yeah.
We want to lower our sign. It's hurting our business, so... could you repeat the motion you had?
Okay, I'll make a motion that we let these people take out the poplar tree and their sign, and the drip irrigation stays because it's ours. Is that the general thing?
Right.
And we'll see what we can do with the cottonwood tree.
Okay, that's the motion.
Second it.
I have a second by Director Fairbanks. All directors in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Okay, nobody's opposed. Item 6 is passed unanimously. Let's see. Replacement of water services. Item number 7. This is bid proposals for PV pipes. Mr. Jones?
Yeah, Mr. President, the district has been experiencing repairs or failures of the polyethylene water service lines to each individual homes and similar as other agencies, and we've been on a program of replacing these services. We have two areas of